workers had been passing by. His eyes darted back and forth between Sam and Nicky, and later there were snickers between him and the other kitchen hand, Victor. The next day, when Nicky arrived at work, Sam presented her with two tickets to Mary Poppins. "If you'd like to go with me on Friday," he said. Nicky stared at the tickets, blushing furiously. Had he and the other men thought she was flirting? Asking for overtime and mentioning the musical hadn't been intended hints, but Sam had obviously taken them as such. "I can't accept these," she managed to say. "I don't think it will be appropriate." Sam had understood right away. His lips, pulled into a near grimace from the strain of his gesture, broke into a big grin. "Oh, of course," he said, hiding his embarrassment in a sudden flurry of activity. He ran his hands through his hair and began sorting out the glasses behind the counter. Gary and Victor began making remarks in Russian every time Nicky was around. Sunja, a fellow barmaid, confirmed the remarks were about Nicky offering sexual favours in exchange for training and quick promotion. How depressing, Nicky thought. If she was to be accused of sleeping away up a professional ladder, she would have hoped that bartending at a crumbling Shepherd's Bush pub was not its highest rung. Nicky folded up her list and put it away. After travelling to Southall twice a week, she was grateful for the 30-second commute downstairs from her flat to O'Reilly's. Besides, they always had a good turnout for trivia night, so she knew it would be a busy and tiring shift. In the pub, Nicky slipped past a group of men crowded near the television and waved at a few regulars. Sunja was vigorously wiping down a table in her usual punishing way. Another barmaid, Grace, often asked after Nicky's mum as if they were old friends. Grace was easily moved by contestants' backstories on Britain's Got Talent and had once arrived to work puffy-faced and sleep-deprived because the little boy magician who'd been bullied didn't win.
"Nicky!"
Grace called from across the pub.
"How's your mum, love?"
"She's well," Nicky said.
"Is she keeping warm?"
Mum's temperature moderation was of utmost importance to Grace for some reason. Grace looked at her expectantly.
"She's got good insulation at home," Nicky assured Grace. "Bet it's not as warm as the old village in Bangladesh, though,"
Steve with the racist grandfather called out. Nicky wished she had a clever comeback, but all she could say in reply was,
"I was born in England, you fuckwit."
Steve grinned as if she'd just paid him a compliment. It was a relief to see Olive weaving her way through the tables. Nicky poured Olive a beer and called out, "I've a present for you." She drew a folder from her bag.
"Is that what I think it is?"
Olive asked.
"Yes," Nicky said. "This one's written in English."
It was Sheena Corr's tale.
The Coco Palm Resort Hotel. The hardest part about planning the wedding was deciding which honeymoon package to buy. Kirpal and Nina spent weeks weighing their options between different locations. Finally, they decided on a beach resort called the Coco Palm. Kirpal liked the pictures of the open blue sea and white sand. Nina was drawn by the resort's tagline, "Try everything once." This would be her only honeymoon, and she was determined to make the best of it. She wanted to try snorkeling and deep-sea diving and all of the other offerings of this resort at least once. When they arrived at the hotel, they made sure that there was a king-sized bed as promised. The hotel receptionist gave them a list of places where they could dine and told them where the pool was, but Kirpal smiled at his wife Nina and said, "I think we'll be spending most of our time indoors." Nina's cheeks burned, and down below a fire was raging. She couldn't wait to be alone with him. For months since booking this honeymoon, she had sneaked glances at the brochure's featured king-size bed strewn with rose petals. She had imagined them falling onto the bed together in a tangle of sweaty limbs, moaning loudly. This wouldn't be possible after the honeymoon. Once they returned to his parents' home, only a thin wall would separate their bedroom from her in-laws. They would have to muffle the sounds of their sensual pleasures. Kirpal smiled at Nina. She wondered if he was thinking the same thing. Then as he reached for their bags, his smile disappeared and a flash of pain crossed his face. "What's wrong?" she asked. "It's my back," he said with a grimace. "I've been having these awful pains since before the wedding, but there was no time to see a doctor with all of the preparations. I think the celebrations just made it worse." Nina tried to hide her disappointment. What this meant, of course, was that they would not be able to make love on their first holiday away together. When would they get the chance, then? A bellhop brought their bags up to the room and received a generous tip. "Enjoy your stay," he said. After he left, it was just Nina and Kirpal, alone and together at last, but unable to express their love. Kirpal fiddled with the zipper on his suitcase and then sat down on the bed. He slowly leaned back until he was lying flat. Out came a long sigh of relief. "I'd just like to rest for a while," Kirpal said. He closed his eyes, his face still faintly contorted in a remaining spasm of pain. Nina realized how much pain he'd been hiding. Perhaps something could be done to relieve him. She lay down on the bed next to him. His body was warm and hard, his breathing soft. His eyes were closed as if he was asleep, but when she brushed her lips against his cheek, he stirred. She sucked gently on his earlobe. Although she didn't know if this was what she was meant to do, her husband was enjoying it so much that she couldn't imagine it was wrong. Small groans escaped his lips now, and as she lowered her lips to his neck and his chest, she could hear his breath getting deeper and faster. She stopped there, considering her options. She'd been warned before getting married that what a couple did together on their first night alone set the tone for the rest of their lives. He had a backache. Yes, it was a problem for now, but if they were expected to grow old together, there would be many ailments in the future. That could keep one or both of them bedridden for life. What would they do then? As much as she loved her new husband and enjoyed this moment, he needed to know that he had a duty to her as well. She repositioned herself so her head was facing his feet. Confused by suddenly seeing her bottom, her husband began to protest. "Why did you stop?" he asked. He barely uttered the last word when Nina lowered her lips onto his precious organ. It became rock hard to her touch. She began moving her lips down, feeling every inch of him tense beneath her. She took care not to put too much weight on him because his back was hurting. Her weight rested on her knees, which were positioned on either side of his chest. She arched her back slightly, putting her precious parts in his full view. He just had to tip his head upwards slightly so his tongue could tickle the ripe, throbbing bud between her legs.
"Whoa!" Olive cried, looking up from the page. "I was not expecting that. I thought these were going to be granny romance stories. These are all out naughty."
"Sheena's hardly a granny," Nikki said. "I think she's in her mid-30s. Her husband died from cancer several years ago." It was a mystery to Nikki that Sheena preferred the company of elderly and conservative women over those her own age. "There's more." Nikki scanned the pages and pointed to a middle paragraph.
"Don't bite me there," he warned her. She obeyed him, but as her lips began to tire of those in and out movements, she let her teeth graze his skin and felt the ecstasy shudder through both their bodies like an electric shock. A sound which signaled pain and pleasure rumbled from his lips.
"She's got a flair for writing," Olive remarked.
Nikki flipped to another page and scanned it.
"Hey," she said, "there's a twist. She starts screwing the bellhop."
Nina got onto her hands and knees, and he stood behind her, placing his fingers into her wet lips. Her hips began to rotate in anticipation of his big, hard member. Usually Ramesh was too busy lifting bags and running hotel errands to notice his guests too closely, but he had seen her getting out of the airport shuttle earlier that morning. The wind had picked up her skirt and revealed a glimpse of her lacy red panties, which were now crumpled near the bedpost. He couldn't believe he was entering her now. She moaned, "Yes, yes, oh, that feels so good." Ramesh looked up, aware that he was making love to another man's wife.
"Go, Nina," Olive said. "Try everything once, indeed. Her husband's watching, though, and enjoying it."
Ramesh made eye contact with Girbal, who sat in the chair in the corner of the room. Gripping his own manhood, he watched his wife moan with raw desire as Ramesh glided in and out of her.
"Are the other stories this naughty?" Olive asked.
"Pretty much."
"Those dirty little minxes," Olive said. "Who's reading these besides you and the widows?" "Well, nobody else at the moment," Nicky said, "but that could change. I'm thinking that once we have enough stories, we could try to get them published."
Olive said. "I don't know. These are very intimate. The widows might be all right with sharing them with you, but it might be another thing to get them out in public."
"These women are a lot bolder than I thought," Nicky said. "I could actually see Arvinda speaking at a femme fighters rally or Preetham doing a dramatic reading."
Olive tipped her head and smiled. It was that "you're getting ahead of yourself" look that Nicky was familiar with, except she was more used to receiving it from Mindy.
"We could work our way up to it," Nicky conceded. Suddenly, there was a cry in the kitchen. Nicky pushed open the door and saw Sam hopping about, squeezing his left-hand fingers with his right hand. "What happened?"
"Got sprayed with hot water. The indicator light on the dishwasher's broken."
Sanja stepped forward and opened the dishwasher door, turning her face away. An angry cloud of steam rolled into the air. She picked out the dishes gingerly and began stacking them on the counter. Sam muttered something under his breath and walked out of the kitchen with Nicky in tow. At the sound of the kitchen hand's snickers, Nicky paused. She didn't need to see if Sam was okay. Sam was fine. She took her place at the bar.
"Bloody idiots," she muttered.
"Who?"
Olive asked. "Those guys in the back."
"Oh, don't let them get you.
They're just resentful," Olive reminded her.
"Probably," Nicky said. "But sometimes I can see where they got the idea from. Sam hired me without any experience. It raises eyebrows, doesn't it?"
Olive shrugged.
"He saw potential in you. Well, maybe he was attracted to you as well, but he tried to ask you out ages after you started working here, and you said no. He hasn't treated you any differently since."
"He has, actually. I used to be able to just chat and laugh with him, but since then it's just uncomfortable. It's all Gary and Victor's fault."
Secretly, she blamed herself as well. Why did she have to go and compliment Sam?
"Tell them off, then," Olive said. "Go on, put them in their place."
For all of Nicky's outrage, she squirmed at the thought of confronting those guys face to face. She was afraid of what they might say in response. "You were asking for it." She was afraid that she wouldn't be able to convince them that they were wrong.
"It's not such a big deal. I can just ignore them," Nicky said.
Olive raised an eyebrow, but she said nothing. The door swung open and a young man appeared in the doorway. Nicky didn't have time to hide her pleased reaction. Olive followed her gaze to Jason as he made his way to the bar.
"Who's that?"
"This guy I met the other day," Nicky mumbled, mouth curling into a smile.
She busied herself suddenly, wiping down the gleaming countertop.
"Oh, hey,"
she said casually as Jason approached.
"O'Reilly's Pub," he said. "There are about 17 of them. This is my fourth try."
"I said Shepherd's Bush, didn't I?" Nicky asked.
Jason considered this.
"Possibly. I missed that."
"She didn't give you the address?" Olive asked.
"I'm Olive, by the way, Nicky's lady-in-waiting."
"Nice to meet you," Jason said. "This is really embarrassing, but I have to use the bathroom before I order anything."
Nicky pointed out the toilets.
"He's cute," Olive commented once Jason was out of earshot. You think so? I don't know, Nicky said.
Bollocks, I saw the look on your face when he walked in. How did you meet?
At the temple, of all places. We were both taking smoke breaks in the same alleyway. I didn't get a chance to ask him what he was doing in the temple in the first place.
Praying, perhaps.
It's more of a giant social club. People show up to pay their respects for about 2 minutes and then they join their friends in the dining hall to eat free food and gossip. It's hardly a spiritual place for the majority of young people.
So maybe he was there to meet with friends.
Ah, Nicky said, that's a problem. I don't date guys who hang out at the temple. I mean, they live in this great big city where the world is at their doorstep and a Gurdwara is their social stomping ground.
Olive gave her a look.
You're doing it again.
Doing what?
Being overly critical. Give the boy a chance.
He went to every O'Reilly's pub in London to find you. That's keen, isn't it?
Maybe a bit too keen, Nicky said.
Nicky,
Olive sighed.
All right, I'm resisting him a little. I don't know why.
I've got a theory.
Don't tell me I've got residual issues with my father, Nicky warned. You've tried that theory before. It only made me feel like shit.
Not your dad, your mum. Jason's the kind of boy your mum would want you to date. A nice Punjabi boy.
There was a devious twitch in Olive's smile.
Oh, God, Olive. What if he was at the temple that day to check out marriage profiles?
Nicky asked.
What if he had checked out Mindy's? That's incest of sorts.
Olive hushed her as Jason approached the bar. There was an awkward silence between the three of them. The trivia announcer's voice boomed across the pub.
What is the second most populated city in Mexico? For 3 points, the second most populated city in Mexico.
Guadalajara, Jason said. He turned to Nicky. Can I order a Guinness, please?
Oh, of course, Nicky said, springing into action. She noticed Olive studying Jason carefully.
Jason, can I ask a question to clarify something?
Olive asked.
Sure.
Why were you at the temple the day you met Nicky?
Nicky froze, her hand wrapped around a glass.
Olive! Oh, let's just get it out of the way, shall we? And then I'll get out of your way.
You'll have to excuse my friend, Nicky began, but Olive held up her hand to stop her.
Let the man speak,
Olive said. Jason cleared his throat.
I was there to give thanks.
Really? Nicky asked. Jason nodded.
My mother was diagnosed with breast cancer a couple of years ago and the doctors just told her that she's in remission. It was a fairly close call, so I wanted to have a little chat with God and let him know that I was grateful.
Olive shot Nicky a smile and excused herself from the bar, taking her drink with her and disappearing into the crowd of trivia participants.
I'm sorry to hear about your mum, Nicky said. That must have been hard.
It was, but she's better now, I have to admit. I don't turn to religion often, especially not at the temple, but there was a familiar peace to it.
My father died a couple of years ago. Heart attack, Nicky said.
I'm sorry.
Thanks, Nicky said. It was very sudden, happened in his sleep.
She didn't know why she was telling Jason this. Suddenly her face felt warm and she was glad for the pub's dim lighting.
So have you got any family in London then?
She asked. Yeah, a distant uncle and aunt. They live near the temple in Southall. Every time I visit, they insist that I move in with them. My aunt is really concerned that I have nobody to cook for me.
Parents are like that, Nicky said. My mother recited a whole list of terrible consequences that befell girls living on their own. Starvation was up there after rape and murder.
I have to say, it was pretty nice having langur in the temple that day, though. I didn't realise how much I missed home-cooked dal and roti.
I missed it too, Nicky admitted.
Weirdly enough, I never cared for dal when I lived at home. I know if I called my mum to ask her how to cook it, she'd try to use her dal to lure me home. I thought, how hard can it be? I bought some lentils in the supermarket and boiled them and added curry spice to the mix. I think I put in too much turmeric.
That was one of the problems with my recipe anyway, and it came out fluoro-yellow and completely inedible. By the end, I just wanted it to look like dal at least, so I tossed in some instant coffee mix to make it browner.
Please tell me you didn't eat it.
I tossed it into the alleyway. The next morning, my boss, Sam, came in, grumbling about how somebody had vomited next to the pub, and I thought, no, that's just Nikki's venti dal latte. Nikki was so comfortable chatting to him that the remaining hours of her shift passed quickly. When Jason asked her what she'd been doing at the temple that day, Nikki shifted her attention to a new group of customers at the bar and busied herself with their orders. The distraction bought her some time to return with an answer.
I teach a writing class there. Adult literacy?
She decided that this would be her standard answer to anyone besides Olive. It was safer. Olive returned to the bar after the final round of trivia was completed.
Jason, your answer to the Mexico question was correct. Guadalajara.
Her voice was pitched slightly higher than usual.
Uh-oh, tipsy Olive, Nikki teased. Teaching those nasty year nines with a hangover must be horrid.
Olive ignored her.
Nikki, did you just hear what I said? Jason is very clever. You guys are cute together. You and Mindy should have a double Punjabi wedding.
Mindy's my sister, Nikki explained to Jason, and Olive shut up.
Mindy's looking for a husband, Olive continued. Do you have anyone in mind, Jason? Friends? Brothers?
I've got a brother, but he's only 21. He's famous, though, if that counts for anything.
What's he famous for? Nikki asked.
Have you heard of the interactive website Hipster or Hervinder?
Yes, Nikki said at the same time Olive said no.
Nikki launched into an explanation for Olive.
It's a website where people can submit photos of themselves sporting trendy beards, and visitors rate them according to how closely they resemble a picture of this Sikh man named Hervinder. He's got an insanely bushy beard.
My brother did a study abroad here in India and befriended the famed Hervinder during a trek in a tiny village. They got to talking about how beards represent identity in Sikh culture and how they've become very hip in the Western world lately. And the idea for the website was born, Jason said.
Your brother created Hipster or Harvinder. That is so cool.
Yeah, he returned from India with a big beard as well. It was a self-expression thing. He tried getting me to grow one, but I looked like a hobbit, Jason said.
You're too tall to be a hobbit, Olive said kindly.
Thank you, Jason said.
Have you got any friends we can set Nikki's sister up with then? Olive asked. Tall ones?
I don't really believe in the whole Indian set-up thing.
Why not?
Olive asked. Ah, too much pressure. Everyone gets so involved, friends, parents. They start putting deadlines on everything as if every relationship between a woman and a man must lead to marriage. It's stressful.
Exactly, Nikki said. I mean, imagine going out with someone your mum picked for you. That's an immediate turn-off.
And then if it doesn't work out, you have all this explaining to do.
And people to avoid.
Too much drama, Jason agreed.
Nikki noticed Olive's attention switching between them as if she was watching a tennis match. She slipped back to the trivia tables, giving Nikki a wink over her shoulder as she left. A wild wind battered the bus windows with rain. Passengers hurried off the bus and ran, huddled, towards the temple. Nikki gripped the edges of her rain jacket hood, but the wind bit at her cheeks. Last night, after she closed the pub and had her last cigarette outside with Jason, they discussed quitting smoking.
I'll quit with you, he said. We can help each other out. Of course, this means I'll have to have your number, you know, for tracking my progress and inspirational pep talks.
Now, after braving the rain and managing to arrive at the temple's wide awning, Nikki contemplated having her last cigarette. She made her way along the edge of the building and cut across the car park, ducking into the alleyway. The cigarette was well worth it. She took a long draw and wondered how she was going to quit, but the idea of having an excuse to talk to Jason made it worthwhile.
Deep in thought, Nikki finished her cigarette and stepped out of the alleyway. Behind her, a gruff voice called out,
"Excuse me,"
he said. She turned around to see a stout young man wearing a checked shirt with the top buttons undone to expose the curly hairs on his chest.
"Is this the temple?" he asked.
Something in his voice gave Nikki the impression that he wasn't asking, but telling.
"Yes," she said. "Are you lost?"
She matched his stare. His lips curled back in disgust as he stepped towards her.
"Your head should be covered," he said.
"I'm not in the temple yet," Nikki replied. The man stepped towards her. There was a hard look in his eyes. Nikki's stomach fluttered with nerves. She glanced around and, with relief, noticed a family milling in the temple's entrance. His eyes followed her gaze.
"Cover your head in the presence of God," he said, eventually through his teeth.
He stalked off, leaving Nikki bewildered.
All of the women were already in the classroom when Nikki arrived. They were busy in their conversations, and Nikki did nothing at first to interrupt them. She was distracted by her encounter with the man. She had never seen somebody so aggravated by an uncovered head on temple grounds. Who was he to order her around?
Turunpal Kaur trailed in after her and took a seat at the furthest end of the room. She laid out her pencils in a row and then looked up expectantly at Nikki.
"I'll be with you in a moment," Nikki told her.
The other women looked up as if noticing Nikki for the first time.
"We talked about our stories on the bus all the way here," Manjeet said. "On the bus? Couldn't other people hear you?"
Turunpal asked.
"Nobody eavesdrops on old lady chatter. To them it's all one buzzing noise. They think we're discussing our knee pain and funeral plans," Arvinda said. "You could at least try to be discreet," said Turunpal. "Ah, being discreet gets us nowhere," Preetam said. "Remember playing coy and pretending not to want it? And not talking about it afterwards. I always wanted to know, was it good for him? Could he try to last longer next time?" Manjeet said. "Or possibly add a few more tricks to his repertoire," Arvinda added. "There was so much of this."
She reached out and squeezed two imaginary breasts, then pantomimed a man rocking rapidly back and forth.
"Then it was over."
The women screeched with laughter and applauded the reenactment.
"You'll be caught for talking about these things," Turunpal said. "And then what?"
The women fell silent and exchanged looks.
"We'll deal with it if it happens," Sheena said finally. "Like Arvinda said, nobody listens to us." "Come on, Turunpal," Manjeet said with a nervous smile. "It's just a bit of fun." "You're taking a big risk," Turunpal said.
She began gathering her things.
"If you're found out, it's not my problem."
The look of dismay on Manjeet's face was clear. Arvinda reached out and squeezed her arm comfortingly.
"The only way we'll be discovered is if somebody tells," Arvinda said. "Are you planning on reporting us? Because if you dare do it, Turunpal, then we're all witnesses to the fact that you were in this class as well."
"So what?"
Turunpal asked. Preetam stood up and walked slowly to Turunpal. Suddenly she had the gait of a fierce matriarch from one of her dramas, tall and powerful, with her chin tipped upwards at an angle so she could stare down Turunpal.
"We'll say that you started all of it, and then became resentful when we didn't like one of your stories. That's the word of four women against one. And Nikki, who can convince people because she has a law degree," Preetam said.
I don't have a law degree, and also, surely there's a better way of..."
Nikki started.
"You're shameless, all of you,"
Turunpal spat. She stormed out of the classroom.
"Wait, Turunpal, please,"
Nikki called, following her. In the hallway, Turunpal paused, clutching her bag to her chest. Her knuckles had gone white.
"Turunpal, before you rush to tell Kulwinder about our classes, just please..."
"I don't plan on going to Kulwinder again. I tried. She didn't want to hear it,"
Turunpal said.
"Oh," Nikki said.
She didn't know whether to be angry at Dharampal or pleased with Kulwinder.
Then who are you so afraid of?
Dharampal didn't answer Nikki's question. She glanced at the small window in the classroom door.
Did you see how the women ganged up on me in there? She asked. I've known them for years, and they've just turned their backs on me. What makes you think you can trust them?
They were just trying to protect themselves, Nikki said.
You're sure about that? Dharampal asked.
Yes, Nikki said. But when she peered at the widows, an uneasy feeling came over her. They were chatting amongst themselves, their voices tinny and barely audible in the hallway. She knew nothing of their world.
Why don't you come back inside, Dharampal, huh? We can work something out.
Dharampal shook her head.
I'm not going to risk being associated with these classes. Those women have no integrity. They don't care about their late husband's reputations. I have Kemal Singh's good name to uphold. Do me a favor and throw out my registration sheet. I want nothing to do with these stories.
She stalked off.
We should ask her to come back, Manjeet was saying when Nikki returned to the classroom. You know what she's capable of. Listen, Manjeet, didn't we stand by you when Dharampal found out about your husband leaving you? She left you alone once she knew she was outnumbered, said Preetam.
What do you mean? Nikki asked. What was Dharampal going to do?
Nothing now, Arvinda declared. It didn't answer Nikki's question. Arvinda's chest was puffed out with pride. Don't worry, Manjeet.
Aye, but her bus just left. She's going to have to wait 20 minutes now for the next one, Manjeet said.
Nikki watched the temple's car park from the window. Dharampal emerged from the building and walked briskly towards the street. A silver BMW slowed down next to her and a window rolled down. Dharampal stooped to chat with the driver and then got inside.
She's just got into someone's car, Nikki said. Is that safe?
The women looked at each other and shrugged.
What would a dangerous man want with old ladies like us? Arvinda asked.
Dharampal's only a few years older than me, Sheena said defensively. She's in her 40s.
This shouldn't have been surprising to Nikki. The smoothness of Dharampal's face bore such contrast to the dreary widow's clothing she draped herself in. That stooping walk, that sigh as she sat at her desk, were just affectations to play the withered and weary character expected of widows.
It's okay just to hop into someone's car and be driven home here, Nikki asked.
It's probably not a complete stranger. People offer me lifts home from the market all the time. They usually identify whose son or daughter they are first, Arvinda said.
Was it a silver BMW?
Sheena asked. Nikki nodded.
It was probably Sandeep then, Resham Kaur's grandson.
Preetam let out a humph at the sound of Sandeep's name.
That boy who thinks he's too good for any girl in this community. He even rejected Puran Kaur's great niece from America. Remember her? She visited for a wedding, skin like milk, and her eyes were green.
Resham told me there were contact lenses, Manjeet said.
Hi, Manjeet. You believe everything you hear. Of course Resham would go around spreading rumours about the girl and claiming she wasn't good enough for her precious boy, Sheena said. She's one of those old-fashioned Indian mothers, completely infatuated with her sons. When her eldest got married, she slept in the bed between him and his wife for a month to prevent them from having relations.
It took him a month to ask his mother to leave his bed. What a wimp, Preetam declared. If that were me, I would have pretended to cry loudly in my sleep every night like a terrified new bride until she got sick of it and left us alone. I would say, make a choice, your mother or me, and he'd choose me.
My mother-in-law did the same thing, Arvinda said. Not on the wedding night, she left us alone that night. But many nights I'd fall asleep and wake up to see her snoring peacefully between us. I asked my husband, doesn't that noise bother you? He said, noise? What noise? She's my mother.
Nikki's mind was still on Dharampal.
Why does Tarampal have to maintain her husband's reputation if he's dead?
The women exchanged looks.
Gemmel Singh was a religious pundit,
Manjeet said.
Good at telling fortunes and doing special prayers for people. Some people still pay respects to him. She's being a devoted wife by making sure that his reputation stays clean.
Arvinda snorted. Ha! Devoted wife. She's got better things to do with her time.
She still has an image to keep, doesn't she?
She depends on it. I wouldn't be surprised if she came knocking on all our doors tonight with a special prayer,
Manjeet said.
I'd show her these, and she'd leave in an instant,
Arvinda replied. She held out her palms. The women snickered at what was clearly another one of their inside jokes. Something about Arvinda's fortune lines, Nikki guessed. Sheena looked up.
Nikki, don't concern yourself too much with this Tarampal, she said. As long as the men don't find out about these stories, we're fine.
Nikki thought about the temple's dining hall and the strict divide that ran like an invisible force field between the men and women.
I trust that won't be a problem, she said. None of you really chat with the men, do you?
Of course not. We're widows. We don't have any more contact with men. We aren't allowed, Preetam said.
Not such a bad thing, Arvinda said.
Speak for yourself, Sheena retorted.
I didn't have as many good years with my husband as you all did with yours. Good years? Between the cleaning, cooking and fighting? Where was the time for good years?
Arvinda looked up at Nikki.
The girls in your generation are luckier. At least you get to know the person before marrying him. You can separate the idiots from the bloody idiots.
Manjeet giggled in appreciation. Sheena remained pensive, her eyes downcast. Nikki could sense that it was time to change the subject.
Who has a story to share?
Nikki asked. Arvinda's hand shot confidently into the air.
The shopkeeper and his customer. The shopkeeper was busy stocking his shelves when the door of the shop opened and a woman walked in. She was slim, but her hips were wide, and she was wearing modern English clothes, but she was Punjabi. He asked her, "Can I help you?" She ignored him and went to the back of the shop. He thought she might be a shoplifter, but then he wondered how she would smuggle the stolen goods out of the shop in such tight-fitting clothes. He followed her to the back of the shop and saw her looking at the rows of spices. "Which one do I use for making tea?" she asked. The correct answer was cardamom and fennel seeds, but the shopkeeper did not want to say. He wanted her to keep asking questions in her very sweet voice. "I don't know," he said. "I don't make tea." "If you tell me, we can make tea together," the woman said. She smiled at him. He smiled back and leaned close to help her with her choices. "Maybe it's this one," he said, picking out a packet of mustard seeds. He held it to the woman's nose to give her a whiff. She shut her eyes and inhaled. "No," she said. She laughed. "You don't know anything." "I may not know anything about brewing tea, my dear," the shopkeeper said, "but I do know how to keep that smile on your face." He put the packet of seeds back on the shelf and tucked her hair behind her ear. She leaned towards him and gave him a kiss on the lips. He was surprised. He was not used to this sort of behavior in his shop, even though he had started flirting with her first. The woman took his hand and led him to the back room of the shop and turned around to face him.
"Why is she leading him to the back room? Shouldn't he take her? How does she know where it is?"
Preetam asked.
"Don't interrupt me," Arvinda snapped. "Do I butt in when you are narrating a story?"
Sheena put down her pen and gave her wrist a stretch.
"This is hard work," she commented in English to Nikki.
"It's not making any sense," Preetam argued, "unless she has actually been there before. Maybe she's a girl that he wanted to marry, but his parents wouldn't allow it, so she has come back in a disguise."
Arvinda looked irate, but Nikki could see that she was considering the suggestion.
Okay, Sheena, put in that detail as well.
Where? Sheena asked.
Just anywhere. So, anyway, we're getting to the best part.
The woman started taking off her clothes. She twirled around until her sari had completely unwound from her body.
I thought she was wearing modern clothes, Sheena said. Why is she dressed in a sari now? Saris are a better image. So change that as well. No modern clothes. No woman wearing a sari would be as forward as that. Rubbish. All over London women are carrying on like this, no matter what they wear.
London, maybe. The Gorries do this, but not in Southall,
Manjeet said.
In Southall, too. You know that hill behind Herbert Park? Young boys and girls are always meeting there. We had relatives visiting one summer, and we took them there in the evening to see the sunset. We saw a Muslim woman wearing a full hijab, dashing from one parked car to another, from one man to another. All kinds of things happen, Preetam said.
Is that where Maya got caught then?
Manjeet asked. The room became a vacuum. The women shifted in their seats, reminding Nikki of the uncomfortable looks on the faces of those women in the Langar Hall when the green dupatta had been holding court. Something about Kulwinda's daughter made people react in this way.
What?
Manjeet asked, looking around.
Dharampal isn't here anymore, and I never got the full story because I was in Canada.
He found text messages on her phone, Preetam said. That's what I heard anyway. You heard, but what do you know?
Arvinda asked, turning to her.
I didn't raise you to speak ill of the dead.
Huh, but everybody knows now, nah? Preetam said. It's been nearly a year.
Not everybody, Sheena said, nodding at Nikki. And she doesn't need to know. I'm sorry, Nikki, but this is a private matter. It's not something Kulwinda would like us discussing.
It was another reminder that the women did not fully trust her. Why can't I know? She wanted to ask as the women exchanged looks and glares. Sheena looked particularly annoyed. It all made Nikki more intrigued by Maya and her salacious past. It was more for curiosity's sake that Nikki wanted to find out about Maya, but perhaps she'd also have a better chance of building her relationship with Kulwinda if she knew. She considered bringing this up with the widows. After all, it was in their best interest that Kulwinda thought the English classes were going well. But Sheena suddenly took over directing the class.
Go on with your story then, Arvinder,
Sheena said. She pointed to the clock.
We don't want to be here all night.
There was a noticeable pause. The women looked at Nikki.
Yes, let's move on, Nikki said. We were right in the middle of it.
She gave Sheena an appreciative smile which was returned. The others began to relax.
Arvinder shrugged. I don't know where to go next.
Describe his organ, Sheena offered. Big or small?
Big, of course, Arvinda scoffed. What's the point of a skinny carrot entering you?
There are ones that are too big.
You wouldn't want a sweet potato.
Hi, that was my problem,
Sheena said, shaking her head.
No amount of ghee could make that first entrance a pleasant one.
A banana is ideal, Preetam said. Nice size and shape.
How ripe? Arvinda asked. Too ripe and it would be like my first experience, a pile of mush.
Why are you using vegetable and fruit names?
Nikki interrupted. These conversations were starting to put her off going to the supermarket.
We don't always, Manjeet said. Sometimes we say danda, the Punjabi word for stick.
Nobody talks about these things. All of our knowledge and language is passed down from our parents. They certainly didn't discuss what men and women did together.
You're right, Nikki said, failing to come up with a Punjabi word for penis herself. She would have to get used to these replacement words, even though they sounded bizarre to her. In a previous lesson, none of the widows had batted an eye when Sheena read out.
She gasped and whispered, "Oh, my darling, that feels so good," as he thrust his cucumber into the depths of her lady pocket.
But we do know the English words, Preetam said, that we learned quickly from our television and our children, like swearing. We heard the way they said it and knew it was wrong.
Cock, said Arvinder.
Balls,
Preetam chirped.
pigs! Pussy?
Whispered Manjeet. Nicky nodded. Manjeet beamed.
Tits, fucking, pussy, arses, Arvinda declared in a sudden fit.
All right, then, Nicky said. We can stick to the produce names if that's what you're comfortable using.
Vegetables are the best, declared Pritham. Tell me, is there anything that gives you a better idea of how it would feel and taste than a description of it as a juicy, juicy aubergine?
Before class the following week, Nicky sprinted from the bus through icy rain to get to the temple. Still shivering in the Lungard hall, she spotted Sheena sitting alone. She lined up to fill her plate with chickpea curry, dal and roti, and then asked Sheena if she could join her.
Of course,
Sheena said, moving her bag. Nicky tore a piece of roti and used it to scoop up the dal. With a teaspoon, she dabbed on a bit of yogurt.
Mmm, she said, chewing the roti. Why is temple dal always so delicious? Do you want the religious answer or the real answer?
Sheena asked.
Both.
The dal is made with God's love.
And it's full of ghee.
Noted,
Nicky said, taking a less generous scoop with her next piece of roti.
Don't let it stop you from enjoying your meal,
Sheena said.
But whenever I try on a pair of trousers and they feel too tight, I know what to blame.
You don't always eat here before class, then, Nicky said. Sheena was a slim woman who did not look like she'd ever suffered an overdose of fatty dal.
I usually go home after work and cook dinner for my mother-in-law and myself before coming here. The traffic was so bad today because of the storm that I decided to just come here straight from work.
So, Sheena still lived with her mother-in-law, even though her husband had passed away. Nicky wondered if she did so out of a sense of duty. As she often found herself doing, she sneaked a glance at Sheena, seeking clues from her modern dress and demeanour as to how traditional she really was.
She's got dementia, the poor thing, Sheena continued,
interpreting the unspoken question.
Sometimes she asks after her son. I can't imagine leaving her to live all on her own, confused and disoriented all the time.
This reason made more sense.
She was a good mother-in-law then,
Nicky asked.
All I seem to hear are the horror stories. I worry about my sister who wants a traditional marriage. Your mother-in-law obviously treats you well, though.
Oh, yeah, she was like a friend, Sheena said. We kept each other entertained at home. She didn't have any daughters, so she really enjoyed having me around. There was no question that I'd remain in the family after Arjun died. Living with them took some getting used to at first, but everything's about adjusting. Tell your sister that. Is she having an arranged marriage?
Sort of, Nicky said. I posted an ad for her on the marriage board.
Oh, some of them profiles are hopeless, aren't they?
I like the one that mentioned the guy's blood type, Nicky said. Wifely duties probably involve donating a kidney in that family. Sheena laughed. When my parents were arranging my marriage, I was mortified that they kept touting my wheatish complexion like it was my most important asset.
Yes, Nicky said, as if it attracts any more candidates if you compare your skin to barley.
Unfortunately, it works, Sheena said. The whole fair and lovely thing? Arjun's whole family was darker than mine, and when we couldn't have children, someone had the nerve to say, well, now you don't have to worry about them taking after his side.
Oof, that is messed up, Nicky said. Yet she remembered having a go at Mindy for buying face lightening cream in India, and Mindy replying,
it's easy for you to judge. You're at least 3 shades lighter than me.
Are you next, then? Sheena said, after your sister.
Oh, goodness, no, Nicky said. I can't imagine having my marriage arranged.
Sheena shrugged.
It's not that bad. Takes the effort out of doing it on your part. I don't think I would have been very good at dating.
But doesn't it all feel very set up?
Not if you play your cards right, Sheena said.
See, when my parents were looking for a boy for me, I did a bit of looking myself. I'd seen Arjun at a wedding, and when my parents asked about my preferences, I basically described him without mentioning his name. They went out and fetched him within the week. Luckily, he'd noticed me at the wedding as well. Everyone was very pleased with themselves.
Oh, that's actually quite romantic, Nikki admitted. She could only hope for Mindy to have such luck in her search.
If you want something, always make your parents or in-laws think it's their idea, Sheena said, pointing her finger at Nikki. Take this old lady's advice.
Nikki laughed. All right, BB Sheena.
How old are you anyway? I've been turning 29 for the past 6 years, Sheena said. You?
If you ask my mum, I'm still an infant and I will never earn the right to think independently, but seriously, I'm 22.
Do you live on your own?
Nikki nodded.
In a flat above a pub.
Don't think I could spin that one to make it seem like it was my parents' idea. Suddenly Sheena's face lit up. With a discreet flutter of her fingers, she waved at somebody.
No, Nikki, don't turn around, she said quickly when Nikki swiveled in her seat. Who's over there?
Nobody,
Sheena said. What's nobody's name?
You're very nosy.
Nobody sing.
Will you stop looking, Nikki?
Okay. His name is Rahul Sharma. He does sewa at the temple 3 days a week because when he was laid off from his previous job, he ate all his meals here. It saved him. Now he volunteers in the kitchen to pay it back.
You sure know a lot about him.
Do you guys talk or just make lovey-dovey faces in the langar hall?
There's nothing going on between us, Sheena said. Nothing official. We work at the Bank of Baroda together. I was in charge of showing him the ropes when he started a few weeks ago.
You're blushing.
So? You're in love.
Sheena leaned towards Nikki.
Sometimes he stays back after work to chat with me. We make sure to have our conversations in the car park behind the bank so nobody on the main road can see us, but that's it. Have you gone out on a date? Get into your little red car and drive out of Southall so nobody will see you if that's what you're worried about, or pick a meeting point somewhere. It's not that easy, Sheena said. One date leads to another, and next thing you know, we're in a relationship. So? I'm still very much part of my late husband's family. It could get complicated. Plus, Rahul's Hindu. People will talk.
People will talk. How Nikki hated that cautionary adage. Mum had used it on several occasions to try and talk her out of working at O'Reilly's.
Who would talk about you and Rahul? The widows? I don't know what the widows would think. I think there may be a limit to what they can tolerate, especially if we carried on in public. Widows aren't supposed to remarry, remember, let alone go out on dates.
I've often wondered why you're friends with them, Nikki blurted out. Sheena raised an eyebrow.
Excuse me?
Immediately, Nikki felt embarrassed at what she had said.
Sorry, that came out wrong.
A moment passed. She avoided Sheena's eyes, scanning the hall instead for a distraction. Then she noticed a clique of women sitting in the centre. Their shimmering outfits and impeccable makeup gave them the same air of glamour as the women in Preetham's favourite Indian dramas.
I just see you as being more suited to be friends with those women over there in terms of age and values.
I can't keep up with that lot, Sheena said. Nikki observed that Sheena didn't even turn to look at them.
I tried. I went to school with some of them. But Arjun was diagnosed with cancer shortly after we got married. That was strike one. People are sympathetic at first, but when the illness drags on, they start avoiding you, like your bad luck is contagious. Then, because of the chemotherapy, having children was out of the question. That was strike two. They were all having babies and forming mothers' groups, and they couldn't relate to me. Then after being in remission for 7 years, Arjun relapsed and died. I became a widow.
Strike three, Nikki said.
I see. It's no huge loss to me. The widows are more down to earth. They understand loss. Those women over there married wealthy men who own family businesses. They don't work and they've got standing appointments at Chandani's.
Who's Chandani?
Priciest beauty salon in Southall, Sheena said. It's one of those places where you take yourself for a rare treat, but otherwise you make do with a cheaper manicure from one of those smaller salons off the Broadway.
Sheena flashed her glittery fingernails at Nikki and grinned.
I've been doing them myself for years. Hot pink base with gold glitter. That's my standard one.
It looks great, Nikki said. She inspected her own nails. I don't think I've ever had a manicure.
I couldn't live without them, Sheena said. Shame I didn't marry a rich man. I'd be spending my whole days at Chandani's talking about everyone. It's a cesspool of gossip, worse than the Lungard Hall. Those women can't be trusted.
Tarampal's warning about the widows flashed into Nikki's mind, but Sheena seemed trustworthy. Nikki felt at ease speaking with her.
Hey, can I ask you something?
Sheena nodded.
Tarampal was really concerned that we'd be found out. Is she that scared of Kulwinda?
She was talking about the brothers, Sheena said.
Whose brothers?
No, the brothers. A group of young unemployed men who consider themselves Sattel's morality police. A lot of them were working at the scrap metal factory before it closed down. Now they patrol the temple grounds and remind people to cover their heads.
As Sheena said this, her hand travelled to her neck. She played with a thin gold chain that rested on her collarbone.
That happened to me,
Nikki said, astonished. The memory of the man's sneer brought back a prickling sensation of anger.
I just thought he was very religious.
There's nothing religious in their thinking. They're bored and frustrated. The more zealous ones station themselves on the Broadway, doing spot checks in children's bags for cigarettes, questioning girls about their whereabouts and activities to make sure they're keeping the community's honour intact. I've heard they offer services to families as well.
What kind of services?
Bounty hunting, mostly. A girl runs away from home with a Muslim boyfriend, and the brothers send the word out through their network of taxi drivers and shop owners to spot her and bring her home.
And people haven't said anything? Nobody's complained about being terrorised like this?
Sure, there's some grumbling, but nobody would dare to speak up against them. Plus, people are afraid of them, but also find them useful for keeping their daughters in line. You don't want to complain too loudly, because you don't know who feels obligated to them.
Is that guy one of them?
Nikki asked. A young, muscular man had just strode into the Lungard Hall. He looked formidable enough to scare a schoolgirl into obeying her parents. Sheena nodded.
They're not hard to spot. They walk around like cowboys so everybody knows they're here.
Bitterness laced her voice. Nikki noticed once again that she was playing with her necklace, but now she tugged it out from under her collar. A locket in the shape of a letter G was visible. When Sheena noticed her looking, she tucked the locket away.
Just a gift from my husband, Sheena explained, for a pet name he used to have for me.
The locket looked similar to something Nikki's grandmother had sent from India when she and Mindy were born, cartoonish initials moulded from gold. It was a child's necklace. The chain was delicate and short. Sheena's hurried explanation struck Nikki as strange, but she was distracted by a bigger question. What would the brothers do if they found out what went on in her writing class? Goosebumps prickled her skin. As she realised, she already knew the answer.
Chapter 7.
The wheel on the screen had been spinning for nearly a minute. Nikki pressed the confirm button again and received a stern warning.
Pressing confirm again will resubmit your order. Do you want to resubmit?
No, she muttered. I wanted it to work the bloody first time.
Her arms ached from holding the laptop in its usually prime Wi-Fi connectivity position over the sink, and she felt woeful for failing at her simple mission to make an Amazon purchase. During a last class, Sheena had asked if she could take a break from transcribing because of the strain on her wrist, and Nikki had agreed to buy a recording device. She peered out at the window. Some clouds, but not a terrible day for a walk. There were some electronic shops in the area that she could try. It began spitting with rain halfway through Nikki's journey to King Street. She broke into a jog and took refuge in the Oxfam shop. When she entered, she was breathless, stray hairs plastered to her forehead. The cashier smiled sympathetically at her.
"Took a ghastly turn out there, didn't it?" she said.
"Just terrible."
Nicky said. On the electronic shelf next to a box of second-hand hair dryers and adapter plugs, Nicky spotted a tape recorder with a glossy red finish. This could work. It would probably be easier than teaching the widows to use a digital recorder with all its